Welcome to Listening with Leaders. I'm Doug Knoll, lawyer turned peacemaker. I teach executive leaders how to listen to emotions rather than words so that they can become the leaders everyone wants to follow. And I teach those same leaders how to be authentically present, available, and connected to their families, despite being insanely busy. I have learned that we are 98% emotional and only 2% rational. Learning how to listen to emotions is, in my experience, the foundational skill of life. Stick around to the end of the show, and I'll reveal how you can be on our next guest in 15 to 20 minutes. So let's get started. Here we are, Anthony Trucks. Welcome to Listening with Leaders, man. So,
thank you.
Pretty amazing guy. You grew up in foster care, which is about the worst way to grow up. Had a pretty rough childhood. I can relate to that. I mean, I grew up in a completely different environment than you did. Obviously, I'm white, and I grew up in affluence and privilege. But I was,
I grew up with all white people too. We're poor. We're poor white people.
There you go.
I have a joke that I grew up poor white trash. If you guys can't see them, I'm a black person, so it's a dumb
there
joke.
There you go. But what's interesting is you got motivated in high school, got a scholarship to Oregon, played football for the Ducks, and then got into the NFL and immediately got injured, and that was the end of that.
Third year, 3 years in, tore my shoulder, came home. My shoulder still sucks. I can only lift it that far. This one goes high. This one is stuck right here. I can't do much with it.
Anyways, let's just start at the beginning. Tell us your story.
Let's do it. Oh, man. Well, here's the thing. I usually tell people this as I get into the story. The story is my story that I tell, but it's not my story. It's your story. It's my experience. So I just want people to grasp that. And I have to tell it with the intention of giving something from it. So if not, it's just you guys listening to some dude tell a story. No one cares about that. But here's the thing. I started life that I remember being given away at 3 years old in foster care. My mom decided she didn't want kids. So if anybody's ever had a moment in time to go, like, I don't feel like I matter to the people I want to matter most to, or I'm less than whatever it is, that's how I began my emotions of life. I bounced around between foster homes. I think 6 different ones. I was like beaten, starved, tortured, forced to chase chickens to earn meals, licking the bottom of people's shoes by force. It was weird stuff. And so I had to deal with that really heavy weight of like, I don't feel like I'm worthwhile or have any purpose here. And it's not that people are there now. Sometimes we've had stints where we fall into life and have that moment. For me, it just happened earlier. And then I ended up in a family, which is my still family. I got there at 6 years old, adopted at 14 after 11 years in the system, 8 years there. I say that I grew up poor white trash. It sounds dumb, but like we really had nothing. Like we were the kids that would go to Goodwill to get clothes. Like we'd get one pair of shoes a year, and I'd ruin those in the first 3 months. I would lace my Nike Cortez with paper clips to keep my toes inside of my shoe. Like didn't have much. And then at some point in time, I had this thought of like, I wanted things, which we all want things. And I didn't realize I had agency. And at one point in time, I started doing like before even high school, I had started like going door to door and like raking leaves and doing yard work to earn dollars. And I'm like, wait, I can actually go do things. People give me money and I can go buy things. Like I've got control. And by the way, I'm one of 6 kids in this family and we're just all running amok like crazy. Mom got diagnosed with MS at 14. So I'm just kind of navigating this like when I was 14, this weird world. And then had a paper route for a bunch of years, did karate up until I was 13 years old. And then I tried football. And football was this thing I wasn't good at. We've all tried things we're not good at. But I tried it, and I sucked for a year. Tried it one more year in my first year of high school. Sucked again, decided to give it up. And all of us have that. We go like, I want to do this thing. I'm not good at this thing. Let me make a good excuse not to do it so I don't have to feel that pain. That's what I did. And I can attest that it happens as an adult. I've had times where I'm like, nah, I don't want to do this. You know, and the excuse of why isn't very good. At that moment in time, I made the choice to tuck away. Not do football. I was sitting in a classroom my freshman year of high school, Mr. Howell's English class, and I'm in the back right corner, and 2 girls are talking to each other, and they don't know I'm listening, and one of them said something that was a great gift to me that I think is a gift sometimes y'all have to hear. She says out loud, the reason I'm so bad is because I'm in foster care. And at face value, it's just a statement, right? It's like, oh, this girl's talking. But to me, here's the crazy thing. Inside of our heads, we all have these running dialogues of what we can and can't do and the beliefs, what's possible. She matched it. It was weird because for the first time it clashed. I'm like, this thing I'm hearing, I don't like the way it sounds. Yet when I say it, it's accepted. And so it shook me a little bit. I went home that day. I stood in front of a mirror at 15 years old. And I was like, Anthony, you're going to be great. Now, Doug at 15 was like, Anthony, you're going to be great. I swear. Like a little guy, you know, probably wasn't like this stance, but I will say this. I was looking dead in my own pupils. I remember like looking in this mirror. It sounds weird, but like I said, oh, you're going to be great. I didn't know what it meant, but I was like, I'm going to be great at this thing that I tried and given up on, football. So I circled back to it. And I did the work that I didn't want to do is the best way to explain it. I went and researched, what do people who are successful in football do? They lift weights, run routes, do speed work. I did that. Here's a crazy thing. And this is what I call the slide that anybody wants to be successful, I find us to do. We were first coming on this kind of before we started recording, talking about like the fact that everybody wants to get more by doing less.
Right.
And I think it's a disgusting way for human development to focus and for people nowadays, because then you become just, you outsource your entire humanity to the computers. This is weird. So for me, I go, I want to be great. I got to find out what they do, and I got to do these things. And I'm going to tell you the truth. The first time you do it, it makes your butt pucker. Like, oh, I don't like this. It's uncomfortable. People are making fun of me. You know what I'm saying? It's hard. And I had a lot of teammates. Here's the crazy part. Teammates who I'm trying to be good for their team make fun of me. Hey, Trucks, man, you're skinny. Get out of the weight room. Hey, Butterfingers, why are you catching footballs? Hey, slow guy, quit doing that speed work. What are you doing? You're slow. It's weird because the work I should do to not have that be statements I'm doing, but getting ridiculed for. Yep. But here's the thing, I stuck in it. And here's the slide, and I'll tell you how the slide applied to my football. I think that when we try new things, oftentimes there's going to be a 10 of 10 of emotional embarrassment pain that can rear up. And so some people do it and go, oh no, I hate that, never again. I call them unsuccessful people, not going to do anything great.
You got to push through it.
Right? Future successful people, they go, all right, it sucked, but I learned something.
Right.
Let me try it again. And I go to it again. It's a 9.5. It still sucks. People go, what are you, a masochist? Why are you doing that? You go, yeah, but I want to be successful. Let me do it again. Why? Because I got to try. You do it again. And then you try it. It's your 8. I got to go from 9.5 to 8, but still an 8 to 10. It still sucks. And eventually it starts to slide down that line. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're really horrible until one day you're not.
It's a zero. But here's the dance I noticed for me was I got to this moment where zero, most people think zero's painless. I can do it, no embarrassment. I don't think that's it. If you think about a real slide, if you go to a slide, like you ever seen those ones that like they're, it's like a big slide in the water, like it slides and it shoots them up into the air and they land in a big pool of water.
Right.
That's the kind of slide it is. Because what happens, it goes from the zero is joy. I can't wait to do this thing I've been doing. Like, oh my God, give me more of that. And it turns around because you know how hard you fought to get good at this. There's a pride that's welled up in you from experience and execution and action. So when I took this concept of football, and believe me, at 15, I wasn't thinking like this, by the way. It just was later on. But I was like, hey, I went month one making fun of me. Trucks, get out. What are you doing, right? Month two, Trucks, why are you still doing this? Month three, Trucks, dude, give it up. Month four, he's still going. Month five, all right. Month six, hey, Trucks, can I get a workout with you? It took 6 months to get these teammates of mine to come around and me to believe I could do something more. And here was the dance, Doug. When I got to the football field, there was something different. And this is the piece that I wish I could plug into somebody's head with anything. Just here, take this. Here's what it was. When I got in the football field, if the ball's in the air, it's my ball. I don't care if you threw it to that guy. It's mine. If you get the ball, you're going down. If I have the ball, get out of my way. The words that rung in my head were, I have done too much work in the dark to lose in the light. There was no way what I did would be for nothing. I killed myself out here and you didn't. You don't get to take this from me. And this mentality went from this pain of like not being good to a joy of like, put me on the field, let me loose, right? It's a different dog in me. And I used to actually, Doug, I would have this when I wore black jerseys, I had a white sleeve. When I wear a white jersey, I had a black sleeve. And here's why. I wanted the opposite team in pregame to know who I was. I wanted to find
So you wore the different uniform than everybody else.
Intentionally. Not a different uniform, a different little pizzazz. They call it drip nowadays, the kids do. But my thing was like, I want you to see me. And my game started the moment I got to warm up. I'm going to look the part. I want to get in your head before I even get on the field in front of you. And it was a different energy. But here's the thing. It didn't come from nowhere. It came from months and months of doing 500 catches a day, running routes, lifting weights, never skipping days, to where I sold my soul to this. And the return was the sense of confidence. Because all of us as humans have an investment bias. If I give to something, I want a return. My return on the work was confidence, self-esteem, pride, and capability. You weren't going to take that from me now. I owned that. You couldn't touch it. that progressed to some cool things. I got a scholarship to go to play football at the University of Oregon. Had my first son at Oregon at 20 years old. I don't recommend that, by the way. You probably shouldn't do it. My old, he's actually now, he is currently, he's calling me right now. That's crazy. He's calling me right this second.
On the shelf,
that's
there you go.
Wild, Doug. Had him at 20 years old, and he's now 21. And I told him, if you do what I do, there'd be problems with you, buddy. Don't do that. But it's been a great situation of him growing. Actually went, I had him when I went to college at the University of Oregon. And he went to University of Oregon and actually ran track there, which is awesome. He might go back because they got this new thing going with colleges, an extra year. That's probably why he's calling me. But I went through this whole journey. Actually, my first start in college was my sophomore year. I did this dark work, I call it, this work in the dark, to beat out a fifth-year senior my second year there. Like, I hunkered down and I got used to doing this kind of work. It was my personal unique separator. That progressed on to playing through college, doing very well. Got a chance to play in the NFL. Got hurt in my third season. NFL stands for not for long. It's just a dumb joke, but hey, it's you're in or out, man. My shoulder's still busted, but life goes on. And then I came home, had no idea who Anthony was without football. Anytime any of us have tried and built something, and you wake up one day and you can no longer do that thing for whatever reason, you have to navigate, like, where's my value? Who am I? You know, trial lawyer for 22 years. Like,
the peacemaker.
You know, then at one point it's like, what do I do today? Like, it's just a different dance. Yeah. And it slowed down, and I had to navigate tough, dark places. My wife and I got divorced. We had three kids. We had two more after him. So we had three kids, divorced, 3 years, and went to a dark space, and then something different happened. My mom, my adoptive mom, unfortunately, she passed away from MS. And I woke up. I was like, I got to change my life. I remember waking up January 1st, 2016, looking in the mirror going, I hate this man. He's not a good father. I would not want my daughter to be with a guy like this. I wouldn't want my boys to mimic a guy like this. My mom would not approve. My God wouldn't let me into heaven operating like this. And it was just, I had a commitment to, like, I'm going to change my life now. And what I ended up doing was this really uncomfortable thing, which I had to have this language that said to me, which was, I was a common denominator in all of my problems. Either I created it or I allowed it. And for me, the language had to dial into me changing things. And so I did. So yeah. We actually, after 3 years divorce, I went and looked at Anthony. I was like, where did the marriage fail? What did I do wrong? I had to take ownership of a lot of different things. Wasn't a good dad. Wasn't a great husband. I was 25. We were kids having kids. But then fast forward 3 years of divorce, we actually got remarried. We're 10 years deep in a remarriage this actually next month. And so, like, I changed my entire life with intention for the first time. But here's what my realization was. It was not the things that I knew. Doug, all of us have these informational pieces. I call them shelf esteem. You read the book. You have the conversation. You know what to do, but are you doing it?
No.
And the thing is, most, or you're right, we don't. And then I go, well, the separator for me was what I know to do. If I do it, I get the result. So I don't think it's what you know. I think it's who you are with what you know. Because you and I both know, let's be real, there are people who are incredibly aware of information. They know things. They're very well read, but they're still struggling and unsuccessful.
That's right.
Then we also know rich idiots.
There are plenty of those around too.
Oh my, it's like, how did this person make millions of dollars and they can barely communicate
pure luck
with words? Pure luck. Right? It's weird. And I go, what is it? What I've come to find, we can definitely call part of it luck. Part of it is when I peek in, these people are savants in a pocket they chose to get great at and do the work. And I call it identity. It's who you are. We're not thinking about who you are. The core, the way you see the world, the action you take, what you identify as. Some people identify as figure it out. I'm a person who figures it out. I don't care what. Yeah, you said that. That's cool. I don't trust that till I've tried that. These people find ways to move with less information and become successful. And so my work went to, like, wow, I think what's made me successful is I don't care what you think or believe. My head says this. Let me try it. My wife and my best friend, closest people in my world to me. At this moment in time, I get to travel the world and speak on stages for, like, Tony Robbins, Chick-fil-A, PayPal, T-Mobile, Russell Brunson's groups, John Maxwell, you name it, big, big stages. It's crazy cool. My wife and best friend, when I first wanted to do this, said, do not do that. It's not a real career.
We now have.
Oh, I'm dead serious.
You make buckets of money doing that.
I'm telling, they didn't see it. They're like, it's not, they're like, you're just a football guy. It's not what you do. And so I had people in my life not believe, but here's my thing. In my head, I go, I know what I want. I'm gonna see it through. So I would read the book and do what the book says. I go to the seminar and do what I learned. I'd read stuff, watch research. I do it. If I buy a course now, the moment I buy it, I get in and I put it into my calendar up to 6 to 8 weeks when I'm going to consume each video, complete each task, go to each call. It's done. I don't join things until I do that, because my thing is, you could have the same information, but I'm going to win because you won't act, and I know it. Statistically, I know it. And so I've leaned into this world now where the work I teach is to become what I call a dominator. That's the core piece of everything I'm talking to, and here's why. I believe that all of us have inside of us a dominator and or a submitter. The submitter is the person that when something raises up, they submit to the difficulty, to the weakness. They make excuses. They crumble under pressure. And they're always the ones that have a blame outside. It's that person. I didn't do it. It was the market. It was this.
Yet they're never. Coach, it was the other linebacker that missed the block.
Exactly, right? It's always several of them. And I had to learn this through that window when I looked in the mirror and go, I got to be a better man. But on the flip side, a dominator goes, I'm going to dominate the submitter in me. I'm going to dominate in the moment that he doesn't want to climb, doesn't want to work, doesn't want to do something. Yeah. I'm going to dominate and I'm going to exert my control over me when I need to, so I can dominate the life that I have as a vision.
I'm going to do the dark work.
The dark work, because that's the piece
totally
of it.
Get it.
All these things are great, and most people make great commitments in comfortable moments.
Yeah, oh, and yeah, then when it gets uncomfortable, they quit.
They stop. They tuck away. And I go, then what happened is you made the commitment in the light, but you didn't work in the dark. So you don't get the benefit in the light
that's
when you
right.
want it.
That's exactly
what I
right.
do is go, I don't care what you see me doing. That's my thing. Is like, I'm going to do it and you're going to see how great I am. So it's undeniable what I must have been doing in the dark. So what I do is teach people, if you want to become that dominator, it's not going to happen with the whole world watching you.
No.
It's going to happen behind the scenes where you're the only person cheering for you. Wife and best friend might not support you, but you know what you want. And it's the glow of the computer at midnight or 4 a.m. It's the taking the reps. It's making the ass, getting the rejections. It's doing the work. And when you do it, it's like the world inevitably, I've found, just conspires for you to succeed, because so many people just don't do this.
That's
and
right.
So what I teach people is how to say, this is a great concept, but you can make this very tactical, which we have. For us, there's real three simple steps. Dirt work. Dig in the dirt. Find out what you got to work on. I'm simplifying a lot right there. Then I call it dark work. Simple process. Design your dark. What does your dark work window look like? I'm talking when you're getting up, when you're going to bed, what happens from what you did in the first step. Then we do what's called a dark work declaration. What will you declare will take place in 90 days from now? When you step out of that, write it now. So I know that I'm at some point going to have to say that. I better be in congruence then. Third part, go dark. You don't go, but hey, world, I'm taking a break. Nobody cares. Go away. Go
build. Do the work. Don't talk about it. Do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't talk about it. The world likes to see people winning. So go win. Have something to talk about. Don't tell them what you're going to go do. Go do the damn thing.
And when you
come back to it, I call it light work. Now step into the light and be dominant and undeniable. And a big part of that is you're going to step into a space that you've never been in before, but you've prepared now for. I need you to draw on your darkness in those moments. I call them defining moments. When you get to that moment and it's on the line, it's trial lawyer, it's, hey, I got to get this thing going. The work you did shines in confidence through how you prepared.
That's right.
And in that moment right there, that defining moment, you either have a mentality of, oh my gosh, hope I don't mess up, or I've done way too much work in the dark to lose in the light. Let's go to work. Put me in, coach. That's what I want to give people. That's a dominator's mentality.
And how do you, I'm curious. People, you're a very charismatic guy. People are attracted to you. How do you take people who want to change, but they don't know how to change? And to your point, they've never had to do the work before. So they don't have the discipline. They don't have the persistence. They don't have the patience. They can't embrace the suck.
Yeah.
They don't know how to deal with the discomfort. Everything. Nope. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. I have a great answer for this.
Yeah. How do you help those people?
Yeah. They help themselves with me being the vehicle to direct them. Here's how I explain this.
Okay.
One of the things that I do is that my process is called a dark work experience. This is a great question, by the way. I don't know if you knew this, but Doug, it's a great question.
I'm so really good at questions. Come to find.
we have all been wired neurologically and psychologically to become the person identity wise who we are. But it all happened through experience, right?
There's programming, a certain, right.
If I had a conversation with you about trial law, there's probably a party that clicks on. It's like, let's go to work, right? God forbid someone challenge you. You know what I mean? But that came because of how many years you did that. Things you can't remember you did at this point, right? It's the experience. And the experience is what most people lack. they want to have the confidence, but they don't have the experience of going through it because that experience is what wires you.
They haven't done it before, or they quit too early.
Yeah. So the thing is, like, our process, just, you know, we go to like a 4-month window. The first month is preparing. The next 3 months of it, it's just life. We've prepared for it. Let's do the plan. Life is a better teacher than anything I could put in a video for you to learn. Because now you're going, I'm going to do this thing. And you get in for a week. You're like, and I don't want to do it. It's hard. I don't care. Do you want the excuse or do you want the achievement? Because here's what it is.
That's right.
And they got to realize that it's the crucible that sharpens and hones you.
It sounds to me, too, like you probably provide a lot of accountability as a coach.
Oh, ton. That's the core piece of it. Yeah.
Absolutely. So that people are paying you big bucks to come in and help them shape their lives. And
yeah.
When they start to falter, you can get behind them and give them a lift and give them a pep talk or
whatever
it takes.
I'll drag them up the steps. One of the two. Like you didn't pay me to sit there and go, it's okay, you didn't get that done.
Right.
No, you want it done. You need someone to kick your ASS to get it done. Okay. And that's what we do. If not, then I'm not serving the people where they want, because everybody is get back to that same point that they got to in the past, which was it got really hard. And then what happens is your submitter identity comes in and goes, hey, it's really hard. You don't have enough time. It's going to be difficult. And so what we make excuses. I don't got time, or, you know, maybe next season. And I go, well, what do you want? I want this and this and this and this. I go, well, here's the thing. That's 120 miles an hour of a life. The people I know operate 120 miles per hour. Man, they got this. Like, I got people that go, and I can't join the program right now. I'm finishing a book. I got a course going on. I go, do you think that I shut my company down when I want to write a new book? What do you think happens? My life, it gets added to it, and you learn to breathe like that. But I go, here's what's happened. You've lived a life wanting 120 miles an hour. There are people that are at that speed and going beyond it. But here's what happens. Every time you get to 85, 90 miles an hour, you feel the speed of it. Your grip starts to get a little bit loose. Your hands get sweaty. You go, and you get frantic, and you hit the brakes. And so every time you approach 90, you just go back to the brakes. I need you to get to 90 miles an hour again, which we're going to get you to. And then at that moment when you want to hit the brakes, I'm going to go grab the wheel and press the gas. And you push more to get to 95. And you go, oh, okay, I can do it. Okay, let's get to 100. Okay, it's a little bit tough. Let me hold here for a minute. And you keep on pressing it up. And the idea is once you learn to get to 120, here's the crazy thing. At one point, 60 miles an hour is fast for you. You've been at 90 smooth. You got there, right? When you get to 120, you get to normalize at that, because there's also guys driving F1 cars at 250. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's levels to it. And so my thing is, I want to get you to the point where you can't handle it. And then I go, great, we're now at the moment where everything you do beyond this, we know objectively you're finally getting better.
Right.
That's my goal for folks. And when you do that, you never are different. Like, think about, this is a simple one, I'll leave it here. Like Jeff Bezos. You look at the picture of Jeff Bezos back in the day at his desk, like a nerd with his brown jacket. Like, that guy looked like a very punchable face, we'll call it. And you look at him now, he's bald, head, muscles. He's a superhero. What's the difference? It's not he just woke up. It's the years of doing things that we never saw that have rewired him at his core to go, I'm one of the most dominant humans on planet Earth. Try me.
Exactly.
That didn't happen by accident.
Nope. Well, that was a long, long talk, but that gave us a lot of great information.
Good.
So let's talk to my audience. People who are, let's take a C-level executive, for example.
Yeah.
What's the message you have for a person who's already at a C-level position, maybe a mid-sized company, and how do they take what you have and put it into their culture?
Oh, 100%. So I've had clients in the past. One of my clients, my favorite guys, I won't give his name, but he's executive at Amazon, recently left. But we worked together for 4 years, was our window of time. Mm-hmm. The goal was always to become a VP. He got to be a VP in his third year into his fourth year. We finally got that and ticked off. The biggest thing that I started was he was already overseeing billions of dollars year over year. He mm-hmm. was overseeing multiple different countries. Like, he was a phenomenal human. But he realized there was more to achieve. And so the language I use came from a guy named Harvey McKay. And he says, the biggest room in the world is the room for improvement. And so we got to find ways to improve. And oftentimes we can't see the things, because here's two big problems with people that are already highly successful. The first thing is, it's hard to see the label when you're inside the jar.
That's true.
You don't know what's affecting you. You're going like, why don't I have this? But the label says poor communicator, doesn't speak up, can't lead very well, people don't like him. You can't see it though. You need someone that can see you. So the first thing I do with folks, I actually go, hey, put me on the phone with the top four people that are close to your life. I'm going to have a deep dive dig. I'll do an anonymous report back to you, but I'm going to find out what you need to work on without you telling me. Because what you're going to tell me is what you want to work on. I'm going to find out what you need to work on. First part of it. Second part of it is I go, all right, you're also going to have a massive ego. EGO for me, everyone's greatest obstacle.
The worst
right? The worst people to work with are the people that are successful because they don't want anyone to see a chink in their armor.
Mm.
And so because of that, I don't give myself permission to improve in things.
That's right. Because so I'm afraid of humiliating myself.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of the shame.
Exactly. And I get it. I've been there. I mean, as a pro athlete, I didn't want to have anybody see me bad. But then I've learned this kind of piece of language to help me. I want to get it right, not be right.
Yeah.
If I focus on getting it right, what's going on is I'm going, look, I want to get it right. There's a strength in trying to find ways to be better proactively, not waiting until crap hits the fan, but doing it on demand, I say. And when you do this, now what happens is I push myself into a situation where I can actually go, look, I'm phenomenal at this, but if I want to be even more phenomenal, I got to find an area that's a missing gap to push this up. So you're not accepting that you suck. That's not the case. You're going, I want to be better, and it's strong to find my weaknesses. Here's an example. I play professional football. We watch film every single day. I don't know if a day went by I didn't watch film. When it was Saturday, when it was Sunday, when it was Monday, you're always watching film. Why? I'm one of the best in the world at it because I still want to find the areas to improve. If athletes can do that and they're prominent, why can't the executive do this? There's no reason you can't take a look at your life. Now, what happens is when you do that, you also have a third piece with an amazing advantage, which is you have this different ego and dog and fight in you. When you figure it out, you shore it up quick. You actually have a different piece. And so what happens is you accelerate your success because you finally know what to spend your energy on to be better. And when you do that, the gap closes quicker for you. So it's right. It's an asset to you to find out where do I got to improve and have somebody show you. When I do that, things elevate quick.
There you go. That was a very fast 30 minutes.
It was. I'm sorry, I talk a lot. I love what I do, man. It's a blast. I'm not going to apologize at all, but there's a piece of me that is... I've seen like my life change. I got this really cool experience of traveling and seeing people. And then I run into so many incredible humans who they want something more. And like, I have a piece that makes that possible. I've loved to see it work. So the more I can get it to, that's all I try to do.
Yeah. Well, you're obviously extremely excited about what you do.
Thank you.
Just talking about it makes you just glow with energy. It's so obvious.
Yeah. Fun with it.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we can't go much longer, but I really appreciate the time today. And you are an amazing human being. Thank you so much. How can people find you?
AnthonyTrucks.com or at Anthony Trucks on Instagram. Very simple.
Okay. Instagram at Anthony Trucks.
Yep. On Instagram.
On Instagram and AnthonyTrucks.com.
Perfect.
And that's how people can find you. I think, wow, what a conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Doug Knoll here. Thank you so much for listening to Listening with Leaders. If you are a successful executive leader who would like to be on this program, please visit podcast.dougnoll.com/podcast. If you got something out of this interview, would you please share this episode on social media? Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on the social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag #ListeningWithLeaders. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to my website, DougKnoll.com, or follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. That's at Douglas E. Knoll. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next show.